Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everybody. Chuck Bonniewell. I'll be by myself today for the Chuck and Julie Show, True Straight Up, the grassroots show, True Straight Up, brought to you by Mountain West Wellness. And we've got with us one of the great guests we've had various times, Daniel Greenfield. He's got a new book, Domestic Enemies, the Founding Fathers Fight Against the Left. He writes for Front Page, frontpagemag.com. There's another book out there, or maybe it's part of it, The Truth About Kamala. Daniel, great to have you.
My pleasure to be back. Thank you.
What do we want to talk about first? The truth about Kamala, or what would you like?
Well, we do have an election coming up. We've put out an ebook called The Truth About Kamala, and it really digs into her background, her politics, her record, her family, all these things that, you know, the media has not been interested in discussing. There's been no vetting. We've had an unprecedented situation where someone was just brought in at the last minute, no real background done on her. So we stepped in, we did this. We've done over 20 investigative articles that delve into every aspect of her life and her record, and we think it's important for people to know about this.
Yeah, I think it is. What are some of the more important ones that you've found in your articles?
Well, family background, she comes from a radical family. Her parents actually met an organization called the Afro-American Association, which banned non-Black members, which was the precursor to the Black Panthers. So this was a very radical family from the beginning. Her father's a Marxist economist, and she grew up in a very radical environment. Her political career, you know, a key point there, people are focused, you know, on the romantic relationship with Willie Brown. A key point that nobody's really discussing is that Willie Brown at that point had been under FBI investigation for over a decade. A lot of his associates went on to be raided by the FBI, indicted. Now, Willie Brown got her political career started. Now, why would Willie Brown be interested in finding a pet DA to put in charge of San Francisco? Well, there's a fairly obvious reason for a guy who's under FBI investigation, and it really sheds light on the corruption that started her political career.
Well, talk a little about her education and background.
Well, the education background is not as interesting. The track record, though, in San Francisco and as California Attorney General, though, is pretty important because those have major implications, not just for where how things were, but how they still are today. The propositions that she signed off on, the policies that she implemented, helped create the kind of crime environment that we're still living through today. And, you know, even as vice president, she signed off on a variety of measures that were intended to do the same thing. Now, right now, there are families of people that receive the death penalty who are going out there and, you know, warning that if Trump wins the election, then, there'll be more death penalty executions. And Kamala became famous for refusing to ever apply the death penalty.
She was Willie Brown's girlfriend and did go to Berkeley, I assume on an affirmative action program of some sort.
Yes.
You get the vague opinion she's an empty vessel that people just fill up and she absorbs without too much of an underlying analysis by herself.
Active. And it's hard to know exactly what's in someone's mind, but her career has been pretty consistently left-wing. When she now talks about how her values have not changed, what she's really doing is she's signaling to the left with the message, you know, I may be saying one thing right now, but my core beliefs are still on your side. They're still left-wing.
And talk about how she became the DA for San Francisco. And oh no, first go into how Willie Brown got her lots of very lucrative California board positions.
Yeah, so Willie Brown got started appointing her to various no-show jobs. On commission, she made about $400,000 doing that. Even more importantly, he began introducing her to all the powerful, politically connected donor families. That's really been her skill set. She's not a good campaigner. She's not really good. You know, we've seen her do interviews, do speeches. It's pretty bad. She's really good at fundraising, though. For people, both she raised over $1 billion. Every time she's run for office, she's absolutely outraised her opponents. It hasn't always helped her in the 2019 primaries. She dropped out beforehand, but she still managed to raise $36 million. It just was mostly wasted. So she's really good at fundraising, and Willie Brown got her started there. Willie Brown taught her the basics of fundraising, which is you actually have to appeal to special interests, and you have to promise them anything. So from the very beginning, Willie Brown actually chaired her fundraisers. He connected her to all the donors, and he got her started on this road, and he's really so at it. She was back in San Francisco, I believe, last month, and she was talking about, you know, the man whose name we can't say, but he told me, if you want to be taken seriously, you have to raise money. And she meant him, obviously.
Right. Well, how did she become to run for DA of San Francisco without any real background or being an assistant DA or anything else, as far as I can understand? Or maybe she was an assistant
Yeah,
DA.
her background was very weak. She keeps talking about all the cases she prosecuted. They've yet to actually produce a case that she really prosecuted. And many cases, what she did was offer plea deals and cut a lot of them. But Willie Brown wanted the support of DA. He got her through the process. He raised the money for her, despite the fact that she already has no record, and worse, though, she was lying about the record that she did have. But the key point was that she would provide protection not only for Willie Brown, but for all the people around him. And there were quite a few very, very bad people around him. There's still arrests being made of people in the Willie Brown network today, actually.
Well, didn't the DA start investigating Brown's coterie of allies? And they were very upset about that, as I understand.
They were indeed. So Willie Brown was definitely worried. He had a falling out with the DA at the time, who was actually one of the first Soros DAs in the country, but he wasn't in Willie Brown's payroll. And Willie Brown wanted to make sure the next DA would be on his payroll. Kamal ran the campaign in a very predictable fashion by playing on identity politics, playing on race, playing on gender. You know, she had a postcard of all the previous DAs, and they're all white men. And she says it's time for a change. This was considered a compelling closing argument.
Well, do we know how many cases she actually did try?
She provided those numbers. She's never provided basic information about the cases. She just keeps talking in general terms. I prosecuted sex predators. The reality is she actually gave them a pass. One of the worst cases, for those who remember, is Bob Filthy Filner, former mayor of San Diego, former congressman. This was a guy who dozens of women complained about what he did to them. It's actually his specialty was the Filner headlock. This guy. It was an open and shut case. Nonetheless, Kamala decided to give him a plea deal in which all he had to do was be subjected to house arrest. There's a pattern of cases like that where she absolutely provided sweetheart deals to the politically connected.
And then how did she go on her way failing up to the Attorney General of all of California?
Against a Republican. Tough on crime Republican. She knew that the California was going further and further to the left, so she decided to go the other way, and she got a whole bunch of money from donors to pad that out. And these are the same donors really who helped transform California, who helped do things like legalize stealing anything under $950. And she became the standard bearer for pro-crime policies, except, you know, she rebranded that as smart on crime instead of soft on crime. This was actually the title of her book, which is now re revealed was plagiarized from Wikipedia and other such high-end sources.
Well, she did have some soft on crime or hard on criminals, I guess. She wouldn't let them out of prison because she people want to use them as convict labor.
And there's that, but overall, she would do things like have a three strikes and you're out policy for drug dealers. By that mean, that doesn't mean three strikes and you're locked up for life. Three strikes and you actually go to jail. So she provided every possible leeway and leniency for criminals, including redirecting, diverting illegal aliens who committed various crimes to having to attend a few classes. And she made sure that police officers and law enforcement personnel had to take DEI classes. That was her priority. That's, by the way, her priority also as VP. There was a recent New York Times story about how when she looked at classified reports, the first thing that struck her was they seemed politically incorrect. She made sure all the analysts had to take DEI classes. That's been her priority all along.
Well, then how about her personal life? We know she was a girlfriend of Willie Brown, but what other, who else did she go before she met the second gentleman?
Oh, she lines with Montel Williams. She was looking for people who had money and could move her forward. Yeah, you look back even at her time early on with Willie Brown, she's wearing outfits that there's no way she could have afforded on that kind of salary. So she was getting in money from wealthier men. And with Emhoff, the relationship was actually pretty interesting because Emhoff was a partner in a significant law firm. And that law firm had all sorts of business with the California Attorney General's office. And one of the things I go into in The Truth About Kamala is what some of those connections and the implications of that were, including the Herbalife lawsuits and some other legal matters. Because, and what's really interesting is also the pattern of donations that began coming into her from the law firm. So the interesting thing there was every time her husband joins a law firm as a partner, suddenly that law firm starts donating a whole lot of money to Kamala. So there was always mixing of business and pleasure, whether it was Willie Brown, whether it's her current husband.
And so then she went from there to run for president of the United States.
That is her current plan. I mean, this is what she's wanted all along. So during her first Senate race, a number of aides are actually resigning. They're complaining that her mind is entirely being on being president. She's running on an easy enough campaign, but she's traveling around the country and she's spending a ton of money, which is a pattern with her. And they say that she's obsessed with being the next Obama. And that's really what her campaign has been. Even though she's an incumbent, she's trying to run a hope and change campaign like Obama. And it does not seem to be working very well for her.
I forgot her illustrious Senate career, where she was, I guess, for 2 years in the U.S. Senate before running for president in 2019.
It's once again pretty much a no-show job. She did practically nothing in the Senate except to make sure to sneak in some sort of point about equity. That was pretty much, and one of the absurd moments came when she actually asked the judicial nominee, a Trump judicial nominee, if he could, in response to abortion, if he could think of any laws where the government had power over the male body. And, you know, the obvious answer is the draft.
Yeah, right. He couldn't remember that, though, as I remember. Well, why didn't she catch on as a presidential candidate originally?
Well, we're seeing some of the same problems. She really had no defined identity. She would keep shifting identities every few weeks whenever her campaign faltered. She started out as a prosecutor, Kamala for the People. Then she switched that up to being a social justice advocate to try to be what everybody wanted her to be. And it didn't work. She tried to break off the black vote from Joe Biden, and she failed at that quite badly. Remember the whole busing incident. So
Right.
once she really did not have the black vote, she didn't really have a path forward.
And why did everybody decide, well, that'll make a great vice president?
Because people wanted somebody that there was no way would replace him. It was basically she was a human shield. She was his bulletproof vest, and that failed also because it turned out a lot of the donors were willing to have her replace him. And a bunch of them are going to be crying at the rate this is going because she's burned through a lot of money and the results are still not good. They would have probably gotten the same numbers if they just kept Biden in.
It's amazing, her public persona is, the joy campaign, always laughing, always big tooth grin, being very Happy and everything else, but I guess it wasn't so happy in her office. She seemed to have trouble retaining anybody who'd work for her.
Yeah, she was a nightmare to work with. The few stories we have coming out of the office are, the usual celebrity stuff, the nobody is allowed to look her in the eye stuff. And she had a 90% plus turnover in her office. But she is a terrible boss. We know that. And we've also now seen signs of the whole Joy persona collapsing. That rally in Michigan where she's wave shaking her fist and screaming, that really, I think, is closer to the real her than any of the I'm your best friend stuff we've seen before.
Right. Well, it's amazing that Michelle Obama and her seem to have really moved through life with an enormous amount of ease by claiming they're disadvantaged. It must be a nice gig if you can get it.
It's a very nice gig. The thing is that these days, a lot of people are actually feeling disadvantaged, which means the fake disadvantage isn't working anymore. You have Black voters talking about how the price of meat has doubled, and they're not really interested in all this empty virtue signaling. They're not interested in the campaign run around abortion and DEI. They want somebody who actually fix things.
Now, in my own analysis of her, her responses when they try to get her to give an answer to, do you support a wall? Do you support limits on abortion, any limits and so forth? And she puts out either a word salad or just evades the question and goes to Trump. But that takes some talent. I mean, that takes some talent. So she's got a little talent to be able to pull that off. And you think she could come up
Big
with a
point.
couple, huh?
As people are getting tired of the talking points and the constant redirections, it's frustrating reporters who are generally are going to be very pro her. They want to promote her, but nobody likes to be treated like an idiot. And that's how she's treated the media. And you can actually see the frustration and the increasingly tough questions coming from people who would normally not be asking her those questions because it's just disrespectful.
And you'd think she could memorize a few points saying, well, walls are not the answer, although we can build a small one. That's what's really not. I mean, she could have come up with answers that were meant virtually nothing rather than refusing to answer at all. Is that the advice she's getting from, I guess, the Obama team who's directing her?
That was absolutely the advice. The advice was to focus on a few set talking points, be all things to all people. Don't alienate anybody because it's going to be a very close election. In the process, she's managed to alienate everybody. The left now does not trust her. Moderates are looking at her very, very skeptically. And a lot of even Latino men and Black men are looking at this and feeling completely unreassured about what an economy run by her would look like.
What's her relationship with the first husband who sounds like, or second gentleman who sounds he can be pretty abusive as a mate, at least according to a former girlfriend?
There's some really dark stuff that came out about his past, which is certainly troubling, but it seems like she's always liked the bad boys.
Oh, that's how you got Willie Brown, I guess. Well, if she wins, where do you think she'll go? I mean, what is it? She won't tell us where she's going to go, but I guess there's plenty of people behind her who will be willing to direct her.
She laid out parts of her agenda. We know what her transition team looks like. These people are part of the radical left. Her focus throughout her career has been DEI. She is absolutely not invested in American security. She's opposed to fighting crime. She believes that everything, all the problems in the country are a failure of equity. So we're going to see some of the same stuff as the Biden administration taken up to the next level. The Biden administration knows at least that compromise between some of the more sane people in the party and some of the crazies, this is going to be all crazies all the time.
Well, where does the Democratic Party go if, with any luck, Kamala does not win next Tuesday? Do they go back? I've seen some saying they're going to be all the more progressive, that the liberal wing, or whatever you want to call it, is really on its last legs, or will they swing more back to the center, i.e., Clinton?
Oh, there's two possibilities. When a political party loses, when a candidate loses, there may be a circular firing squad in which all the sides fight each other and try to trade blame. The other possibility is one we saw after Hillary Clinton's defeat, which is that they come up with a big conspiracy theory to explain their defeat and unify the party around fighting Trump and around whatever their conspiracy theory is. In 2016, it was Russian Facebook ads. I'm sure they have some sort of fallback conspiracy theory, and that's going to be their impetus, and that way they never actually have to figure out what went wrong.
What? Where does she go if she loses? I mean, she's, well, I guess she's 59 or 60. If she loses, does she just go quietly into that gentle night, or does she try to be relevant? What does she do?
I don't think she has a plan. Her husband certainly would like to get back to his very nice multi-million-dollar paying legal career rather than teaching one class at Georgetown. Very notably, he only actually quit his day job when it was clear that this is happening, that she's becoming vice president. So he has absolutely no confidence in her. I wouldn't be surprised if he's checking around to see which law firms need him. As for her, I mean, she can take the Hillary route, where she can spend the rest of her time being bitter and ranting about Trump. Honestly, I don't think she's going to take that route. I think she's going to find whatever sinecure will fit her. Unfortunately, she can no longer be a senator anymore. And she's going to kick around. She's going to make a bunch of money delivering speeches. She's going to try to do the Obama post-career thing, but I don't think Netflix is going to sign a deal with her. And I don't think anybody's going to pay her $3 million to deliver a speech. So that's going to be a problem.
Well, if the second gentleman can make millions in law firms, maybe she doesn't have to. Maybe she could go out to Martha's Vineyard and hang out and other places. Just she doesn't seem like she's a hard worker. Of course, Michelle wasn't a hard worker, so they'd kind of make great buds, wouldn't they?
Yeah, all the fantasies about Michelle Obama running for president. Michelle Obama had zero interest in doing that. She doesn't actually like the work. And Kamala doesn't really like the work either. She has a pretty light campaign schedule. I figure she's going to go right back to her very nice mansion in Brentwood. And yes, she's going to hang out with all the political elites. She's going to get whatever bones they throw her way. But she's not going to, I mean, her career seemed to be at a dead end 2 years ago. I think it will be right back to being at a dead end.
Well, let's talk about the book you've written. Tell us about that.
Well, collection of investigative pieces that we've done, about 20 of them, The Truth About Kamala, that really delves into every aspect of her life from the beginning of her career. We've looked at the corruption. We've looked at some of the money men behind her. We looked at her husband's financials. I looked at her track record, which has been absolutely disastrous in enabling crime in California, and what that's going to really mean for the United States of America, because crime is one of the biggest issues for people. And with Kamala, we're going to get a president who has always been on the wrong side of the issue when it comes to crime. She's been pro-crime from the very beginning.
The one I was talking about is domestic enemies. The founding fathers fight against the left, which you, I assume predeceases or pre comes before The Truth About Kamala. Tell us about that one.
Yeah. My first book. It really shows how all the problems we're dealing with were the ones that the founding fathers were dealing with. It tells the truth about the birth of the Democratic Party, which was always a radical leftist organization. And it shows how the American left actually came to be, because the left is always reinventing itself. It's changing its names. It's woke, it's progressive, it's leftist, it's liberal. They're using all these names, but it always has been a fundamentally radical organization that is driven by the same thing that Kamala is, the idea of equity. So the American Revolution was based around the idea that you had the right to pursue life, liberty, and happiness. Whereas the French Revolution was built around the idea that the government would enforce the perfect society. And that is also what Kamala is driven by. It's what the left has been driven by from the very beginning. And some of these people like Kamala may not be all that bright, but they're still pursuing that agenda, the idea that if you give government enough power, they're going to make society absolutely perfect. And the results are horrifying every single time. Over 200 years of the same track record, can't be wrong.
I mean, I can remember where it used to have, they used to have Jackson Jefferson Day dinners every year. When did exactly the Democratic Party start?
So back to 1800, the French Revolution sends some of its agents of influence to the United States. They're here to rally support. They're here to overthrow George Washington, rally support for the French Revolution's various wars in Europe. And they have this vision of just seizing the entire world and transforming it. So their agents that are dispatched to the United States work on setting up societies that are going to be supportive of the French Revolution and against the George Washington administration. And those societies are called democratic societies, the French renamed them. Then there's the Democratic Republican Party. The Republican part of that is the moderate part. The Democratic part of that is the really radical part, the ones that wants to enforce equity. Eventually, the Democrats shed the Republican part entirely. They just become the Democratic Party. And that's still where we are today, is very much still the radical party.
Well, they shed it for Jackson. I mean, he is often as the founder of the Democratic Party, if Jefferson is not.
Well, so it was the Jackson Van Buren administration. The Jackson part is the part that people actually like. The Van Buren part was Tammany Hall. Martin Van Buren was the boss of the Tammany Hall party, an incredibly corrupt, really the prototype of all the party machines, the political machines that are rigging elections. Under Tammany Hall, which was also a massive criminal organization, voting was considered so dangerous, the women couldn't be allowed to go there because you would regularly have violence and assaults by the Tammany people. So people did like Jackson. They did not like Van Buren. Van Buren gets bounced out of office pretty soon. And the result is the Democratic Party that we all know and hate.
Well, they've never... I love this thing about democracy. They've never been very big on democracy. Certainly the South and slaves or blacks were not allowed to vote. After the Civil War, then they came up with lots of ways to prevent blacks from voting, who were at the time Republicans, including literacy tests, poll tax, the whole litany of ones. And where that didn't work, then they had the machines in like Tammany Hall, also up in Boston and Chicago and everywhere else. So when do they become interested in democracy?
Well, I think domestic enemies is that this actually goes back around 200 years. The black voters in New York are actually voting Federalist, which is the more conservative party of the day. And there are attempts to actually suppress black votes, not just, you know, in the South, in New York. They're doing this in wherever Democrats actually have a hold. And they engage in riots. They engage in the original race riots, which were once again aimed at Republicans, and they were aimed at black people.
That's the Civil War riots, or which riots were they?
Yes, the draft riots are the worst riots, and they're specifically aimed at driving black people and Republicans out of New York. But even earlier than that, in the 19th century, even before the Israeli Republican Party, they're using violence to suppress black votes in New York because black voters tend to be aligned back then originally with the Federalists. They tend to be aligned with the more conservative parties, the more constitutional parties that are actually protecting their rights.
So once again, crossing our fingers, Trump wins. What do they do? More draft riots, more of the same.
Well, we know what they're going to do. They're going to be there absolutely will be riots. That's a given. They're also building. They do absolutely have a fallback plan, and the plan is some of the same stuff we've seen in the first term, just amped up. They're going to try to run the country as much as possible through the bureaucracy, which will obstruct President Trump in every possible way. They're going to have radical states that will also challenge everything. There will be constant lawfare, lawsuits against every single policy the administration brings forward. And there's also going to be criminal investigations that we've seen all the cases against Trump. There are going to be a lot of them. They're going to generate once every few weeks. Anytime Trump does something or says something, they're going to try to generate an investigation over it. And they'll have other surprises, I'm pretty sure, because the one thing you can bet is the party that criminalized election denial is going to remain consistent in its commitment to election denial. One of the things I point out is the Democrats have never accepted a single Republican presidential victory in this century. They're not about to start now, certainly. They challenged both of Bush's win. They challenged Trump's win. They're definitely going to challenge it again if he wins.
And what should Trump's response be? Passive, just watch him do it, or does he try to respond in some way with his own lawfare?
First of all, he needs to go aggressively after all this entire system, and there's many ways of doing that. The federal bureaucracy needs to be reined in, and much of it needs to be eliminated. One of the great things he did that I really love in his first term was he took BLM, which is not Black Lives Matter, but the Bureau of Land Management, and he said, okay, you guys get to move to Colorado now. And so many of them quit because they did not want to do that. Take a whole lot of the federal government, move it somewhere else. Let's say Nome, Alaska, move it to places where they're not going to want to go, force them to resign that way. And as far as all the welfare goes, so much of this is funded by taxpayers anyway. Much of this is being done by government grant money. We need to pull all that government grant money away from these radical organizations that are behind the welfare.
Should it give it to radical Republican ones? I mean, it's always just a one-way thing. They go out, they give tens of millions for NGOs and green and everything else. We cut the money off to the extent we can because they have it all, and we do nothing. And then they just wait till they're back in and the spigots turn back on.
This could actually consider doing what the Democrats did, which is funding much of their political election activist apparatus using taxpayer money. You know, they do these comparisons of how much money Republicans are spending on something on an election or Democrats are spending. And that's not the real amount, because the vast majority of Democrat money is public money. It's not money that's even accounted for in all this. And versus the Republican money, that is all the money that there is. So if Republicans can actually be smart about it, if they can actually find a way to fund Republican activist groups, conservative activist groups, Christian organizations, they should absolutely do that, because you have to learn from the enemy.
Right, right. Well, Daniel, thanks so much for coming on. Tell everybody where they can get your work and read more about it.
Oh, I have the honor of working for David Horowitz at the David Horowitz Freedom Center. What's The Truth About Kamala is actually now up at our store. It's at frontpagemag.com. Just hit the store button. It's there. It's The Truth About Kamala. And it's important just to get that information and share it with others so that people know what they're in for if she wins.
Oh, that's tremendous. That's tremendous. Well, great having you on, and look forward to having you on after the election, hopefully a victorious one.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Daniel Horowitz. All right. Now we've got a, where is that chat button, Daniel? Not Daniel. Our BBS guys. Oh, there's chat. I got to have that to see people's questions and everything else. Well, there we go. Yee-hoo. And since I actually get to read the questions, as opposed to I need glasses to see them on. How do we turn this one away? This is fun. Fun. Our screen keeps on going. How do we get out of that screen? Layouts and options. Oh, well. Let's see if we can try this one. Nope. Well, let's talk about what's going to happen over the next 8 days. We've got an amazing fight on our hands, and one of the great fighters is J.D. Vance. Everybody told Trump that he'd be awful. All the donors told him they shouldn't have him, and he turns out to be absolutely tremendous. He went on. Remember when Bobby Fischer used to take on, I look so much better with those glasses. I look blind. Let's see. Can VP be part of the certification process if they themselves are a candidate? Yeah, I imagine they can. I don't think that you'd stop that. Yes, you can refuse to certify Trump. Good guess. Thank you. Yeah, he's very good. But Vance, just like Bobby Fischer used to take on, you know, 10 people at one time, Vance on Sunday decided to go on ABC, NBC, CBS, and CNN and take over their most snarky interviewers. And all the gloves are off. This was no longer let's be nice interviews. Everything they could to try to destroy him. And could we have Vance with... JD with Tapper. This is hilarious.
Ask yourself a basic question about network integrity. You guys talked about the Russia hoax nonstop.
The FBI was investigating
it.
So we covered them.
And so you took the words of unnamed FBI agents and put them on your network as if they were the gospel truth. You did it again and again. A viewer of your network would have believed that Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin conspired in 2016.
No.
That was totally and preposterously false.
No.
Well, that's
what you just said is false. We covered an FBI investigation. I don't know why you want to talk about the FBI investigation.
You covered it in a way that gave credence to anonymous sources' accusations. You did it yourself. Your network did it, Jake. But again, can we talk about the issues that Americans care most about?
I'm talking about things that Donald Trump has said.
Yes.
If you have an issue with whether or not he's talking about the economy enough, that's between you and your running mate. I'm talking about things he has said this week.
Every single rally that he does, he talks about how he wants to unleash American energy so we can lower the cost of groceries. He talks about the fact that housing has become unaffordable. He talks about the wide open border, Jake. Kamala Harris and her allies, you know, it's interesting. Kamala Harris and her media allies, and I would put CNN in this category. You guys seem to care. Well, they should watch your network more, because you guys seem to care more about Donald Trump's past than the future of the American people. We're running this campaign on making the American dream.
I'm specifically asking about how Donald Trump is going to be president in the future should he win, and then we're being told
he's going to pursue economic policies that lower the cost of groceries and make life more affordable again. He talks about it every single day on the campaign trail, and so do I. What you're talking about is an anonymously sourced story, or one guy, one guy who is a disgruntled employee.
I told you,
five other people pushed back against him and said that what he said was dishonest. So why don't we talk about the policy that's affecting American citizens and not what Donald Trump allegedly said, according to one guy who's pissed off because he got fired by Donald Trump?
That's great. That's not easy to do. Tapper was at its best when he was attacking him, going after him, indicating that he could just talk about Trump. Just wants to talk about Trump's statement, and Vance wouldn't let him. And that's not easy. And he did it on three different shows, which was amazing when you get down to it. Four different shows, CNN being the fourth. And to spar with him every time, and no matter how many tricks they tried to pull, we just talked about the FBI thing. No, you didn't. You had anonymous sources about everything. And so it was wonderful to watch him just battle those people. And hopefully we'll have more of that. I mean, I think it's wonderful to have somebody that bright. And, you know, because we had Pence. That's who we had for ourselves. And that was awful. That was awful. I mean, Pence was about as bad as he stayed on point until he betrayed everyone. But I think it's great. Whoever in Trump's camp suggested insisted on J.D. Vance as VP was brilliant. J.D. was great. Yeah, he absolutely did. And all the big donors said absolutely not. It'd be awful. Well, who you need is some nice woman. Since moderate woman who will allow you to get a bigger slice of the vote. And he went, no, I'm going to get somebody who can actually be a vice president and can actually do it. Yes, Vance made it look easy and made them look stupid. He really did. He really did. My heart would go crazy talking to fake news people like that. You know, so many people just... Uh-oh, I have somebody wanting to...
Oh, yeah, Chuck, I just wanted to say that, did sure. You watch the rally last night?
I did, I loved it. I thought it was great. We got a snippet.
Rally I have ever seen. And, you know, I'm so thrilled that Trump has an abundance of Team America. I mean, it's just an abundance of the most talented, well-spoken people. I mean, it was just one right after the other. I mean, you know, they've been rating everybody on how good they each were, and that, you know, people were saying, Tucker Carlson was the best, and then Elon Musk, and then his attorney, the ABBA lady, was she not fantastic?
Right.
And, you know, any of them can carry this MAGA movement forward, or they're calling it Team America now. Any of them can carry it forward. It was just so inspiring. And I just wondered if you had a favorite. I'm just curious your opinion. I'll sign off.
No, it's okay. Julie's not here, so you can be substitute Julie. The one I love the best was Elon Musk. I mean, he is going to be such a massive ally, and he's going to turn over. I like when he said, "Well, you got this wasteful, incredible bureaucracies, $6 billion budget, $1 trillion budget. How much are you going to cut?" And he said, $2 trillion, and he meant it, right? It wasn't just like, "Oh, I'm going to cut half." No, he meant it.
Yeah,
He's
and
really
he's
looked
such
at
a
it.
lovable nerd. They're just so, they showed their lovable side last night. There was
Yes,
so much
yes.
joy. I mean, they're the ones with the joy. I mean, it was just anyone that tuned in just really got a taste of what Team America is about.
Well, let's go ahead and play the Elon Musk.
Oh, yeah, great.
You guys are awesome. Honestly, this is like. I mean, this is the kind of positive energy that America is all about.
What's so great about that? Most people don't have the opportunity to get in front of a large audience and have them screaming for you. That's something you normally don't get. Some people have, and if you're a politician, you have. But if you're a businessman, you never have. And so Elon Musk was out there just eating it up, just eating it up. And wow, there's a reason why the Rolling Stones are still touring at age 80. There's a reason why Frank Sinatra, they had to drag him off the stage. He was so senile. But it's a fix. It really is a fix.
And Jeff Bezos doesn't get that kind of adulation, or
No.
Bill Gates. And they'd give anything to have that. I mean, and people thrive on that, especially if they're not, Elon kind of grew up nerdy, and now he's like,
He's a rock
he's
star.
part of the, saving America. And it was wonderful to see. But I loved it when Trump's attorney said, "This is for you, Hill." Short for Hillary. She threw that MAGA jacket on top of the lectern, and she danced all off the, off the runway. I mean, it was just fantastic.
Really. It
Okay,
really.
thanks.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on. Who else we got out there? Johnny, my heart would be fighting my brain to keep my tongue in cheek. Or is that my tongue in my cheek? Whoever hired that one, put on that comedian, should be fired. They're the enemy within for the Trump team. You cannot let them define things. He's a comedian. He made a joke, and you're all supposed to be, "Oh no, he called Puerto Rico an island of garbage. He was kidding." And that's what they do to Trump, and they try to get everybody forget all 4 hours, forget everything else, concentrate on a joke. And I know about jokes going badly. That's why we're no longer on 710 KNUS. But it really wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad a joke. And that's all they can concentrate on. They can't do anything about the other 33 hours and 55 minutes of the deal. Wonder if while he was standing there, he was contemplating running for president. Well, he doesn't have to because he's going to have all the power in the world. Trump, I mean, he's done it with Twitter. He went into Twitter and cut the workforce by two-thirds. He's done it. So all he has to do is say, "Okay, here's five departments, Elon. Do your magic. Do your magic." And he will. I said, "Okay." Now they'll try to stop him in the courts and everywhere elsewhere. But this is the one chance. This behemoth has been growing ever since the New Deal in the early 1930s. And it's never slowed down. It hadn't gone quite as fast under Eisenhower or Reagan, but it didn't shrink. Nothing ever shrunk. And now we have
Take a
this.
left to go to Kohl's, or
Oh?
Yeah, we could. I just wanted you to have a good fellow to.
Who's talking? Hello? 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 Oh, well.
Sorry about that.
Who are you talking to? Whoops, like Barney accidentally unmuted his mic. Let's see, that comedian's considered one of the top five in the country, huh? Hello?
What's milk? It's milk. You gotta take the pasta out. You gotta take the pasta.
Oh well, we've got a many multiple voice show today. But going against Elon Musk and going against all the other people, we have people like Michelle Obama, and they want to get back the mail vote. They didn't care about the mail vote before because the female vote was much bigger. It was a 52-48 approximately between the sexes, but the guys were always maybe a little bit more for the Republicans, but the women were overwhelmingly for the abortion team Democrats. Now there are more males who hate the Democratic Party and voting Republicans than are females voting supporting the Democrats. So now they have to be nicer to males, as little as they can possibly be. But here's Michelle's Obama's effort to bring in male votes. If we could play her.
We have every right to demand that the men in our lives do better by us. We have to use our voices to make these choices clear to the men that we love. Our lives are worth more than their anger and disappointment. And we are more than just baby-making vessels. Of men that don't listen to you or value your opinion, just remember that your vote is a private matter. Regardless of the political views of your partner, you get to choose. You get to use your judgment and cast your vote for yourself and the women in your life. Remember, women, standing up for what is best for us can make the difference in this election.
There you go. If you're a male, does that appeal to you? Did you go, oh yeah, let me vote for Kamala. I forgot. My gosh, that is so compelling that I've changed my mind. I'm not going to vote for Trump. She's so abrasive, so degrading to the opposite sex. It's amazing they put her up there. Now she goes to just women rallies, sure. But they're trying to get the male vote. And I promise you, most males, certainly this male, that is not a very appealing screed. It's everything you hate about the Democratic Party. Here is Kamala caught on the hot mic.
Oh, we have microphones in here.
Oh,
listening
hi.
To everything.
Oh,
I didn't realize that.
Okay. So, well,
you'll
now
believe
you tell
us.
My F words.
We just told all the family secrets. Shit. Anyway, it's good to see you.
I mean, that was a setup. That was a total setup. She knew they were there and wanted to give the message, but she was saying, we've got to get the men behind us. Well, you're not going to get the men behind us by acting like that. And it's interesting. I think it's 58% of the males will vote Republican and 55 or 54% of females will. And that's why they said, wait a minute, that math doesn't quite add up for us. And we vote a little more often. But the idea that men will kind of go, yeah, whatever these people, how they can denigrate, how they can put down, how can they can yell at, is amazing. Such a bully. Dr. Phil talked about that, how the left were bullied. Yeah, Dr. Phil was on that thing. Do you believe that? Dr. Phil, tell men how much you want the right to kill their children. What a joke. That is where Kamala wants to hang out. Yeah. Sitting at the bar. drinking beer. Just amazing. And so this entire, we've got seven more days until the Republic is saved, because I think if we lose this election, we've lost the Republic. And so it's going to be an amazing time. I mean, it's kind of one of those ones where you couldn't believe that the election was so soon. And then all of a sudden, it's kind of go, when's it going to get here? We need for this to be next Tuesday, because it's hard to think about anything else other than the election. Okay, that'll be it. I want to thank everybody. I want to thank Daniel Greenfield and everyone else who chatted or came on. And on Wednesday, we'll be back and Julie will be joining us. So take care and thanks.